It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2022 returning MOI Global Instructor Gokul Raj Ponuraj, a value investor with a focus on small and mid-cap compounders and spin-offs with a bias towards emerging markets. He has been investing in the Indian market since 2006 and in global markets since 2017. Gokul Raj manages the public equities portfolio at Bavaria Industries Group. The firm uses its balance sheet assets, permanent capital, to invest in opportunities with an attractive risk-reward trade-off. Gokul Raj holds a Master in Finance degree from London Business School and is a CFA charter holder. I have greatly enjoyed your presentations in the past and look forward to this one as well. So would like to turn it to you now, and I will be back at the end for the Q&A. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, John. And hello to all the many of MOI Global members. It's a pleasure for me to, a pleasure and a privilege for me to present once again in the European Investing Conference. So the idea this time that I'm looking to present is pretty, I don't know how you will call it, a small or mid cap. It's a 900 million market cap business, but by no means a small business, because I think it manages around 55 billion of AUM in real estate funds. So it fits the criteria that we generally look for. So I'm looking forward to presenting the idea to the members. Can we go to the next slide? Just as a disclaimer, we've been invested in Patrizia since mid-2022, and we will buy or sell more shares depending on how the execution happens. So just keep that bias in mind. So just as a quick elevator pitch, Patrizia is one of the largest real estate asset manager in Germany, and it has a pretty strong balance sheet where 250 million of net cash is available on the balance sheet. And it trades at extremely cheap valuations in our view, primarily because it doesn't get recognized as an asset manager and gets clubbed with the other real estate business is a REIT or a developer kind of a business. So markets haven't recognized the transformation the business has happened. And the historical track record of the business has been very good, where they've been able to compound book value at 15.5% over the last decade. And the owner operator, who continues to own around 54% of the firm, has good governance record, and it's a clean business. So I think there is potential for this stock to get recognized as a capital-light business, which continues to grow and which has a high visibility in terms of earnings. And that re-rating along with the growth should help shareholders deliver value. Next slide. So as I said, just as a quick history, Patrizia was a real estate developer slash broking firm, which used to help institutional investors buy and sell real estate projects. So historically, they were capital heavy on the balance sheet. They used to build or buy assets and then sell it. So it had all the usual cyclicality and the risks of a capital heavy business. But starting from 2012 or let's say late 2010, they wanted to transform themselves into a asset manager. So not the right, not a completely right example, but let's say something similar to what Brookfield did when they were investing out of their own balance sheet, but then started raising funds and then built asset management business to leverage their investment skills, right? So similarly, Patrizia, to leverage its investment and operational skills, turned into a asset manager from being a balance sheet based risk provider. And you can see it in the numbers. So from 2012, when almost 94-95% of the income was from balance sheet based operations, today there's hardly anything. So there's only one significant asset on the balance sheet, The remaining is all through fee-based income where there is no capital required as such. And they've really scaled up. So it's not some small asset manager. It's a pretty scaled up asset manager where they've grown their AUM at 24% CAGR over the last decade. And the more interesting thing is that majority of their funds are locked in structures where these are funds with 10-year plus lifetime or perpetual funds. So this provides them strong management fee sources. So as you know, probably a real estate fund typically, or infrastructure or private equity fund, have different timelines, and very few funds are evergreen in nature. But in Patrizia's case, there's a lot of funds where it has an evergreen structure or has a 10-year plus vehicle, which allows you to just get management fees year on year deliver a recurring earnings stream. So as I said, historically, because of Patrizia's in-house capabilities on the development and asset management side, they're able to do deals where you buy a project that's half constructed or something, take it and allow your investors to invest in that, and then use your expertise to turn it around and sell those projects, or let's say give them an exit. But these kind of things are relatively small in their portfolio. Only 20% of their funds under management are in structures where there is some element of execution risk. But majority of the portfolio is actually in very stable rent yielding assets, where which is being downsold to investors like pension funds and insurance companies who can hold them for the long period of time. So the first key investment thesis is that this transformation has happened, and it's not something, it took a while. Like in 2016, maybe it was 50-50 between balance sheet and the non-balance sheet stuff. But by now, it's purely a non-balance sheet based business. Next slide. As you can see, they've been able to grow their fee income at a healthy pace. So just to put it in context, so they have three primary fee earning divisions. So one is the management fee, which is typically based on the asset value. They clip, I don't know, 40 bips or something of that sort as a management fee every year. And then there is a transaction fee. In the older structure of Patrizia, Patrizia was, let's say, 10 of its clients come together and buy a portfolio of, let's say, 5 office buildings in Munich, right? So these structures had where structure where the management fee was separate and transaction fee was separate. In the new funds, which are more like the Blackstone real estate fund kind of world, where you have a management and transaction fee embedded into a fund structure, that's different. But because of this historical record, they have different management and transaction fee. And transaction fee happens when you buy or sell a property, then they get the brokerage income on it as well. So typically what happens is, let's say they have 55 billion of AUM, roughly around 10 to 15% of it churns every year, which means that they do transactions of somewhere between 7 to 8 billion of properties buying and selling for their clients. And that allows them to charge a transaction fee on top of the management fee that they get. And then on top of it, when these funds perform better for their clients, they do get a share of the carry. So typically, unlike a traditional asset management business where maybe it's clear on a 2/20 structure over a hurdle rate, here it's slightly more complex because the carry structure for each and every fund is very different in their case. So in certain cases, it is more like when the asset yield on cost basis crosses 5%, Patrizia can take 10% of the incremental rent that they get. Or in certain cases where there is a hurdle rate of 6% or something, and then on top of it, they get a 10% carry. So broadly, it's like the regular carry. But one thing which we need to understand, and this is probably pretty important to understand, is that they don't account for their carry except for in one structure. So let's say only when the carry gets monetize. Let's say, for example, if there is a building and then there is a sale happening and then there is a profit generated for the client, only when the recognition of the profit happens, do they get the carry, and only then it gets accounted. A lot of the carry is still unaccounted and not on the financials as such. And again, as I said, as you can see in the chart, majority of their funds are in structures where there is no clear exit date. So in certain funds, where in these perpetual funds, if a client needs to exit, then there needs to be a secondary transaction. So someone else needs to buy their share of the fund. And for broking that, they again get a fee. But typically, most of these clients are institutions with proper liability management, where they need to have these assets for the long term as well. So there is hardly much churn on the asset base as such. And they have a pretty diversified client base. So they serve around 500 institutions, primarily Germanic in origin, or let's say not non-European institutions, and 6,000 odd semi-private or ultra HNI investors. So they have a reasonably well-diversified client base. Next slide. And as you can see, it's a pretty scaled up platform. So if you look at it either from the top real estate deal makers in Europe or top 10 asset managers in Europe, if you exclude the in-house things like a Swiss life manager or AXA's life manager or Allianz life manager, Patrizia as an independent asset manager is actually one of the largest out there. So they are in the likes of Blackstone and CBRE. So I think it would be the top three would be Blackstone, CBRE, and then Patrizia in the independent space. And it's still not well recognized for the scale that they have. I think very few people understand that you have an independent asset manager in Patrizia, which is so large. Next slide. And Patrizia, because of their roots in Augsburg, Bavaria, they've been relatively conservative, at least that's my feeling from tracking them for a few years now, having visited them in their offices and having met the team. I believe they are pretty conservative, and that shows up in the numbers as well. And it's not something just what my gut feeling is, but you can see that in the numbers as well. They have a very conservative culture, and probably that is also backed by the founder owning such a large stake, unlike a lot of the other businesses where you don't see a proper skin in the game operator. This culture exhibits itself in the way they mark their assets for their clients. It shows in the way they pay their employees or partners, or the mix of portfolio that they have, or how they account for their carry, and also how they have cash at both the fund level and as well as at the balance sheet holding company level. One of the key things we need to understand is, let's say, Blackstone or a Brookfield, all in their real estate side of the business, have a large exposure to the higher risk value add segment, where there is a lot of execution risk. Whereas in Patrizia's case, that's just 20% of the overall portfolio. 80% is in core real estate funds, which is diversified across offices and retail and residential. And hence, it's not as exposed to the risks that the other asset managers have. And as I said, it's only in one of the balance sheet assets where they need to accrue the carry. It gets accrued. In other cases, what we see as carry is all realized profits. And generally, the leverage on their portfolio as a whole at this point is on average is 33% LTV. So 33% loan to value is probably among the lowest compared to peers. So one of the reasons is also because a lot of these German institutions also don't like aggressive leverage. So unlike the Anglo-Saxon world, where the LTVs of some of the assets are high and these are marked on higher asset values as well. So in Patrizia's case, it's marked on lower values with the 33% LTV. So it makes some of these structures much more resilient than what you would see in the Anglo-Saxon world. And for example, even the way they value it, they could have easily valued over the last few years when interest rates became negative. They could have used that in their DCF and created a big bump in NAV or net asset value. But they've always historically used a 10-year rolling average. So it meant that while they have benefited by the lower interest rates over the last few years, but it's still not a very meaningful difference compared with how much their peers would have benefited. For example, in places where their peers would have marked up their values by 4 to 5% a year, Patrizia marked it by below 2%. So they always have been relatively conservative, and that's also because of the way the structure is, right? They don't have much incentive to market on a higher mark to market because they don't get their carry on a mark to market basis. In majority of the funds, so they didn't have any incentive as well to do that. And I think the unaccounted carry is significant. It's difficult to predict how much that would be, but yeah, that provides a buffer to the valuations other than the tangible book value that we speak about. And this allows the management to believe that even with this huge dislocation in interest rates over the last few months, their AUM valuations would be stable or at best over a 12 to 18 months can dip by 5% considering the move that's happened. And this shows that their volatility is much lower than what you would see in their peers. Next slide. And as I said, their balance sheet is pretty simple. So if you had looked at this balance sheet a couple of years back or 5 years back, it would have been much different. So if you actually see it, they have one single asset, which is Davonia, which is almost 550 million of value. And then they don't have much other co-investments. And then you have a net cash on balance sheet, which is probably around 250 to 60 million. So this net cash means that on today's market cap, almost 30% of the market cap is net cash. And we'll speak a little bit more about Davonia, but Davonia is basically a structure which where they did a deal in 2013, where it was, I think, around a 3.3 billion deal, where they coughed up 5% of it, and then 95% was raised by clients from other clients. This structure also had a carry where this had to be marked to market because it was an SPV structure and IFRS makes them mark to market it. And this allows them to accrue a lot of profits. So while they bought it at 3% kind of 3.3 billion or something, over the last 8-9 years, rents have grown. And on a cost basis, the rental yield is now around 6%. And now currently it's marked at 3% net revenue. So I think the 550 million that we show on the balance sheet is reasonably solid. And even if there is some downgrades or write-offs to it, it will be very, very small because Davonia portfolio is primarily a residential portfolio in Munich and other parts of Bavaria, mostly all supply constrained areas there. Cost of construction has gone up, replacement values have gone up, and unlike the other parts of Germany, this is a part where they're able to pass at least, they have indexed inflation on homes at 70% of home. So they're able to protect their cash flows. And this is, a good asset to own in an inflationary scenario. And that makes me believe that compared with the current market cap, just the assets on the balance sheet and the cash is more or less equivalent to it. So markets aren't valuing much about the asset management business. Next slide. Here I've just put together on how diversified their strategy is in terms of either separate accounts or commingled funds, or in terms of the strategies, or in terms of their end user base. And in terms of their geographic spread and in terms of their sub-asset class exposure in terms of office, residential, retail, and so on and so forth. This is generally, pension funds, insurance funds, which is majority of their clients or savings bank, all have very, very long time horizons, and that brings a lot of predictability to this business. Okay, this is something which again shows the conservative culture, but also something which is difficult for me to think whether it's a positive or a negative, primarily because for a business that has 55 billion of AUM and runs a relatively large asset management business, the entire total management remuneration that the top management gets, as you can see, this is probably what less than 10 million euros. So that sounds to me, and this includes the CEO, co-CEO, CFO, CTO, all put together, and this, just from a thumb rule basis, looks very low compared to how a Blackstone or a Brookfield does it. And probably that's also because of the way Patrizia is structured. So Patrizia doesn't earn anywhere 200 bits on the asset management fees, so it earns maybe 40-50, so maybe that's the reason their remunerations are slow. But as the company widens itself and diversifies its portfolio into different markets and different asset classes, I do believe that they need to attract very good investment talent, and the culture needs to change a little bit to attract and hold on to these good investment talent, and that would mean that some of these costs would go up going forward. Next slide. You can look at their broader notes, and you'll see that over a long term, their funds have performed better than the benchmark, outperforming by almost 4.2%. And the last 3 months' numbers are still not out, but I would think that they still continue to outperform their benchmark. And I had a call with the management last month and two, 3 weeks back, and their sense is that they would want to use this crisis to be on the buyer side, be more aggressive in taking advantage of the market dislocation. And they would probably want to do something similar to what they did with their Davonia portfolio in 2013, where including the carry, it's been a pretty good investment, where I think around 100-115 million of net investment has grown to around 550 million euros after the deferred taxes. So they believe that they have the cash at the balance sheet level and at the funds level to be a buyer in this market, and they will start looking for, while the market is currently frozen a little bit, I think as the deals start happening and as weaker players need to shed assets, I think they would be on the other side buying these assets at attracting valuations. The current market environment would mean that the transaction income and performance fee income might be weak for a few quarters, understandably with lower transactions and lower booked profits. But I think that's okay, because majority of the even with the lower transaction and performance fee, the asset management business will still be profitable, and the management believes they can scale this fee income to around 250 million euros in the next few years. And they believe that the current 55 billion AUM can be slowly scaled up to 80 billion over the next 3 to 5 years, which would mean that they are targeting an organic AUM growth of 8-10%. And they also believe that they can add on top of it through acquisitions of other smaller asset management businesses like they have done in the last few years. Next slide. So this is just a very broad sense of how the German real estate or residential asset class have done over time. And it's compared to equities, I think it's generally been a little bit more resilient, and with increasing replacement costs and undersupply in a lot of these markets, I think they will continue to hold on to their rental yields. And I think the right way to think about these are more like inflation indexed bonds. It's not an asset class that I might directly own, but I would be happy to own an asset manager of this asset class. Next slide. Yeah, as I said, for example, to support this 50 billion of AUM outside of Davonia, the net capital that the business has on the balance sheet is like 50 million euros or something. So literally, they don't need any capital to grow their asset management business. So the incremental ROEs are extremely high because there's no denominator to it. So you don't need any extra capital to double your business, so as to say. And that means that Patrizia continues to be a strong dividend payer. They continue to pay around 75% of the profits. And on incremental AUMs, the rough unit economics would be something like this. So they would be able to charge 40, 45 bips and adding out all the transaction and transaction fees and performance fee more like 50 bips. And I think they will be able to have a cost to income of the mid 40s. And that would mean that the net PAT or PBTs on the business would be around 20 bips. So when you mean that there could be an additional 10 billion of AUM, when that adds, you can straight away see that there's operational leverage to it, and there could be meaningful growth in profitability. So one of the other things that needs to be said, which is also a little bit of catalyst, is that the Davonia portfolio has an end date in late 2023 because they bought it in 2013 and there's a 10-year horizon. So the 10-year horizon ends. It has 17 blue chip insurance and pension funds backing it. So I think they may not be wanting to sell the portfolio in 2023. They will all be willing to extend. So the management just says publicly that they're looking at extending, but it could also trigger a technical exit when there is an extension happening. And if that technical exit happens, 350 million of the 500 million that's tied up with Davonia is actually the carry income, right? So that can either be converted into cash or as an additional stake in the portfolio. And if it gets converted into cash, that will be a huge cash inflow next year. While it's not very clear what's the probability of this happening, but let's say if that happens, then we are speaking about almost 600 million of net cash on the balance sheet compared to the current market cap of 900 million. So that could be a pretty big catalyst for the stock. So I don't know how to put the odds or probability at this point, but anyway, we are not paying for that odds. So it's like a free catalyst to have. Next slide. As I said, the core reason for buying Patrizia outside of this capital light business and a scalable business model is the cheap valuation. The stock has done pretty poorly over the last few months. And I think that means that the current market cap is around 900 million euros or maybe slightly lower based on today's price. So if you add the cash and the Davonia portfolio, I think that means that the asset management business is almost free. So this is for a business which has recurring revenue profile, has a growth opportunity. So with increasing fund inflows into real estate, institutional money into real estate and the alternate asset management space, I think this is extremely cheap compared to any of their peers. Even if you look at, okay, even if you don't want to do it this way, even if you do it on the traditional way of price to book or EV, EBITDA or dividend yield or any of these metrics, as you can see, it's extremely cheap with the discount to the book value, with EV EBITDA 6x and a dividend yield of 3%. So even when you wait for the markets to recognize it as an alternative asset manager, there is enough downside protection from the asset base and the current valuation metrics. In a bull case scenario over the next 5 years, you have all the three levers for shareholder returns that's possible here. That could be revenue growth with 8% AUM growth, and there is a high possibility of margin expansion because of operational leverage, because your costs don't scale the same way as your revenues, because for you to generate 8% AUM growth, your cost may not need to go up 8% every year. So and on top of it, you can also have a valuation re-rating as the market understands the asset management business, or this being classified into alternate asset management story. So you have the scope for all the three levers to kick in, and I think that sets up well for where your downside is capped from the asset value, and then your upside has all the three levers. I think that creates a pretty asymmetric setup, which should help shareholders. Next slide. If there is one slide that can explain the reason why I'm pitching this idea, is primarily this slide. So here in this chart, you can see that I'm comparing Patrizia with four German REITs, all the bigger ones, the bigger ones listed, from Vonovia to DEG, LEG. So if you see the share price chart, it's almost like a 1:1 correlation. So it looks like the markets are just putting this into a German REIT basket and pricing it the way a German REIT needs to be priced. But in reality, that's not the case. So all these German REITs have all the assets on their balance sheet, have 40-50% LTVs on their balance sheet. The debt is on their balance sheet. There's no fee income. There's nothing. There's no none of the advantages of being an asset management business. And yet, Patrizia, for some weird reason, gets classified into this group. And that's the primary reason why I think the stock is extremely cheap. And maybe that's because, as you see from the shareholder base, majority of the shareholders are German-focused investors. And I don't think there is enough peers for these investors in the listed space. So I don't know. So global real estate asset managers like Blackstone of the world and Brookfield of the world, I'm not sure if there's enough listed space in Germany for these kind of businesses, and that's probably the reason why Patrizia gets classified as a broad German REIT, and that gives, I believe, shareholders like us an option to buy it into a price where it's being priced like a REIT, but it's a alternate asset manager with a recurring fee revenue. So that's pretty much, this chart is primarily the main pitch of my presentation. Next slide. So I think it's not like Patrizia's name where there's not enough information for you to dig or something of that sort. So the management has done analyst day in 2019. So their quarterly presentations are very detailed. The investor relations is actually pretty open to you. So they their annual reports are very detailed. So they also have your quarterly investor videos. So for anyone to just dig in, it's not that difficult. So you don't need access to management. You don't need to visit their offices. Just on a desktop-based research, there's enough information for you to work on. And this chart is more about how there is enough coverage. And I think if you look at the kind of numbers that everyone is projecting compared to what the market is pricing it, it looks to me that the mispricing is pretty severe. So I don't know when markets would recognize it in an asset management business, but I think that is it's not a trap that there's no way why the recognition shouldn't happen. And my view is that even if the recognition doesn't happen, as long as you get the cash flows because of the 75% kind of payout, I think over time the gap should close between the value and the price. Next slide. Yeah, so as the potential risk, so one of the key risks is one of the reasons why you don't see a lot of the profitability flowing into the PL statement like what you would see in a Blackstone kind of model is primarily because of the historical structure, right? So as I said, they manage $55 billion across 146 funds. So it's not one of those where when you have a Blackstone which raises a $10 billion fund, there is tremendous cost synergies. But in Patrizia's case, only in the last few years, they've been able to raise these $1 billion funds. Historically, all the funds were like, okay, you want to buy 5 or 10 properties together, and then that gets split into 20 investors. So These didn't have the fund structure which gives you a lot of operational cost efficiency. So some of the cost issues are structural, and I don't think there's any easy answer to it. So they need to outgrow it by launching larger and larger new funds for you to see a cost efficiency that's similar to peers. And as I said, their transaction fee income will always continue to be there because these historical structures, that's how they make their money. So they need to have transactions in these funds to generate fees, and that fees will flow into their profitability. So one of the other things which is quite difficult for me to understand, I can understand their argument, but still something which is slightly different, is the buyback angle, right? So they've been buying back shares. So it's not like they don't buy back shares. They've been buying back shares. They've been spending around 30 million euros or something in the last 2-3 years to buy back shares when share prices were probably more than double of the current price. So so they've been buying back shares. But one of the things which the management keeps saying is that from a very long-term angle, for them to be for them to scale up their asset management business into different verticals and grow their asset management business over time to 80 billion AUM and maybe 100 billion AUM at some point, they want the credibility of being a listed company. So there's no way that they would want to take it private, considering that 54% is already with the promoter shareholder. So they say that the scope for them to buy back is relatively limited because they don't want to reduce the float meaningfully. So in an ideal world, I would have thought that they have enough cash. They know that the share price is extremely cheap. It's not rocket science to see that the share price is not priced correctly. So I would have wanted them to do a lot more buybacks, take away 20% of their float or something of that sort. But the management, for some reason, is skeptical, saying that they don't want to affect the liquidity too much. They want to be listed and so on and so forth. But I guess there will be a price at which or the valuation at which all these don't matter. I hope that they do bigger buybacks, but it's still something which is not a catalyst in itself, from my understanding. So their view is that they'd want to grow the business. Buyback is just something which they want to, they just wanted to do on an incremental basis, not something which they want to do on a big bang basis. So one of the other risks which I would say is that historically they have had 2-3 asset management acquisitions, all pretty small, but at multiples which are more like 10-12 times EBITDA, where they've generated maybe 10%+ ROEs, but it still doesn't look to me like, okay, they have been the best acquirers. They're probably above average, but still, it's still a risk that when you have 250 million of cash on the balance sheet, and then they are saying that they're looking for acquisitions in synergetic areas, that could still be some bad acquisition and that could deteriorate value here. And one more thing which is slightly, I'm still slightly skeptical, is while I'm clear that these guys have a rich history in real estate in Germany especially, and I can understand why people will trust them with their money to do good German real estate deals, they've now expanded into non-German real estate, infrastructure funds, real estate credit funds, a lot of these things over the last 4 years. And I think on an incremental basis, they're seeing that, let's say, for something like infrastructure fund to have a higher growth than real estate fund. So I'm not sure what is their right to win in this, in these spaces. But the good thing is that they're not risking their capital. So it's still clients' capital. So even if it hits their future growth opportunity, but not the current balance sheet or anything of that sort. So, but it's still a risk that we need to be aware of and need to see how they do it. Next slide. So as I said, okay, there's also one broader macro argument, is that with the current debt that a lot of these developed economies have, I think it's not sustainable to have a, I don't know, 5% interest rate or something of that sort. So by nature, if inflation continues to rise as we have been seeing, there would be financial repression, meaning the governments holding back interest rates well below inflation. And usually in those kind of scenarios, real estate as an asset class is a good class to own, because they at least help you to retain your purchasing power. And that would mean that a lot of their clients, institutional clients, would still need to increase their allocation to organized real estate. And you've seen that a lot of the institutions continue to have a target how much they want to invest in real estate from their to match their liabilities and assets. And that would mean that there is a still a scope for increased inflow into these funds. And that would set up a good situation where Patrizia can get some of this capital. For example, I think last 10 years they've raised 17 billion into their funds, and last year alone they raised almost 2 billion in funds. So I think there can be a case where incrementally every year there could be a 2 billion kind of a fundraise. And on top of it, you understand that for this new capital raise, the costs are much lower. So I think the fee generation visibility is pretty healthy. And then, as I said, the asset class itself is something which I'm reasonably comfortable to own in such a volatile macro environment, where a lot of these European cities still continue to gain in population, either from urbanization or from immigration of people. And that would mean that the demand for some of these assets will continue to be healthy, while the supply is still weak from all the regulatory things and the cost inflation that we are seeing in Europe. So that would mean that this is a reasonably okay asset class to own in this tough times. And European equities currently are out of favor. And within that, I think in Germany specifically, one of the reasons is also, I think there was an issue with Adler, and then the general real estate stocks have been hit hard because of some governance concerns with one of their peers. And that along with the fact that markets put Patrizia into the bracket of a German real estate REIT, residential REIT or something of that sort, I think we are able to buy into this good capital-light business at very attractive valuation. So that's the final pitch, is that while the downside is capped, the upside has all the levers. And I think at 5 years from now, if markets understand that this is a capital-light compounder with recurring earnings, then you could have a very good IRR as an investor with very limited downside. So probably that's the reason we are buying Patrizia at this point. Yeah, that's it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Gokul Raj. Really appreciate the presentation. Maybe just a couple of questions from me. In terms of the co-investment portfolio, Davonia specifically, any insight there on, is that going to be a long-term commitment, or could that change at some point?
So as I said, Davonia is a 10-year fund. So the end date for the fund is 2023. That's the reason actually the accrual of the carriers also happened. So the management is very clear that it's a solid portfolio, so they have not seen any markdowns. But my understanding is also that residential values in most of urban Bavarian cities, including Munich, which is where their large exposure is holding up well. So there is that part. And in 2023, I think if markets continue to be, their clients will extend their time horizon of the fund by another 5 years, maybe. Or there could be a possibility that some other anyone who wants to have an exit, the fund itself leverages itself to buy out these other smaller investors who want to exit, because the LTV there is still pretty low, or some secondary investor buys out the guys who want to exit. So the management thinks that this portfolio will get extended. The only question which I have is, if an extension happens, would that technically trigger an exit? Because it does technically trigger an exit. Whether that exit trigger would convert their carry into cash, that I'm not very clear. But if that happens, then that's a very good catalyst for the stock.
Your point on share repurchases is noted. What about dividends going forward? Do you have any sense for the trajectory there?
I think they would continue to grow the dividends in line with their profit growth. So they've been, I think if you combine the dividend and buyback, majority of the cash goes back into the shareholders' hands. So they will continue to do buybacks and dividends. Buybacks on a smaller scale than what I would have liked. But as I said, the current dividend yield is 3% plus. So it's not high enough, but it's okay. It still get paid reasonably. So once there is enough cash flow in the business from, if the cash flow grows as I think it will grow, then I think the dividends will also go in line with it.
You talked about the large ownership by the founder, 54%. Any insight on whether that could come down over time? Because that would also increase the float and perhaps give the company a little bit more flexibility on capital allocation.
Yeah, I think if logically speaking, the founder knows the value of the business. So I think for that to happen, for him to reduce his stake would mean that the share price needs to be multiples of where it is currently. So I don't think he would be a seller at the current prices. So there's no way out, or let's say there's no way where he's going to sell out at 10 euros per share or something of that sort. It doesn't make any sense for him. So the question would be that there is enough reasons why he's not wanting to take it private. But if I was in his situation, the right thing to do is there's 400 million, 350 million that he needs to spend to take it private at these prices. There's 250 million already on balance sheet. Maybe lever up the balance sheet by another 100, 200 million, take it private. It's extremely cheap, right? But I hopefully he doesn't do it, and the management thinks that it wouldn't happen because they have all the reasons to stay publicly listed.
The valuation, as you show it here, adjusted for net cash and the co-investment portfolio, is obviously extremely low in terms of AUM, 20 basis points.
Even for free, actually, this was done a feedback, right? The presentation. So the share price is down 10% since the last week or something. So if you actually add the cash and the co-investment portfolio, I think the asset management business is probably free at today's price.
So my question would be, what in your mind would be a fair valuation based on AUM?
Okay, so it's slightly difficult for me to say that, but let's assume that the business is able to do 20 bps on incremental property on a blended basis. I would think that 1.5 billion should be a reasonable price, because the private transactions are far, far higher. But when I say 1.5 billion, I'm just saying for the asset management business. So it's difficult for me to put a specific number, but the general rule is at least it's more than 100-150 bps of AUM value.
Wonderful. Well, I will leave it there. Gokul Raj, I would just encourage our members to feel free to reach out with their own thoughts or questions. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us again this year and for sharing this compelling investment thesis with the MOI Global community.
Thanks, John, and it's a privilege. And looking forward to other presentations, and also if there is any pushback on this idea from people who know this business or industry better. So looking for and encourage any of your members to directly write us a mail or something.
Wonderful. All the best. Goodbye for now.
Thank you. All the best.